Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next episode of the Radio Data Podcast. Today, my expert guests are Yetunde Dada and Ivan Danov, who both work at Quantum Black. And both are well known in the MLOps community thanks to the open source project called Kedro. Yetunde, Ivan, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam, for hosting us.
Yes, it's my pleasure. And as always, let's start with the introduction. So could you please tell us more about yourself?
Sure, I can maybe go. So my name is Yetunde. I am a product director at Quantum Black. I've been with the company just over 4 years, and I was brought on to help lead with Ivan the Kedro project as you see it today. My background before this is, I'm actually a mechanical engineer from South Africa that moved into nonprofit work and then did some data engineering and data product management before landing up in the UK, which is where I'm based.
Ivan?
I'm Ivan Danov, and my background is mainly software engineering, and I've been with Quantum Black for the last 6 years, five of which working on Kedro, initially starting from the very beginning, and then later joined by Yetu, where we formed a dream team and worked really nice together over the last few years. And I really, really enjoy that. Before that, I was working with Ocado, which is like a, I don't know if you're familiar, but like it's a British groceries, online groceries retailer, and they built some technology for world, like different online groceries retailers around the world. Prior to that, I spent some time in Denmark, where I did masters. And before that, I worked in web studios in my native Sofia, Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The project that you focus the most in your daily work is Kedro. And could you please briefly explain what Kedro is to our audience?
So I'll probably tackle what is Kedro, I think, at two levels. The first one would be like, what problem on earth is this thing solving for? I think we observe, I think, for a lot of companies around the world that there's a workflow where data scientists will typically make a Jupyter notebook. And then they say, I will throw it over to the data engineers and machine learning engineers to put this into my production systems. Most companies have what you call a research unit and then a production unit to make that code production ready and fit for production. The thing that Kedro is trying to do is give everyone, I think, on the team, because we know that all of our work is collaborative, a way to hit the same level in terms of engineering best practices. So everyone is kind of working with software engineering best practices so that that code doesn't need to undergo so much refactoring or rewriting in order to make it production ready. So yeah, it's sometimes described as the leveler, if you can think of it. And really, it's making sure that a lot of the data science, data engineering and data science prototypes that we write are production ready from the get-go and require less work to get them into production systems. And therefore, more things actually get to have value for companies. In technical language, Kedro is an open source Python framework, a workflow development framework, actually, that helps, I guess we can call them ML practitioners, so anyone writing data engineering and data science code, write maintainable and modular analytics code so that it's production ready. And it does this by enabling teams to adopt software engineering best practices, especially in places where people don't really know how to do that.
So what are the main important reasons why data practitioners choose to use Kedro?
Mm-hmm. There'll be a range, I think, for the different users, and I'll hand over to Ivan to maybe add some more detail here. If you're a data scientist, you'll typically pick up Kedro because you're expected to collaborate with other team members, and maybe you want to write better structured code so that you can actually share it with people, get their input, and make sure that the code is in some way maintainable by not just yourself, but other team members that you might have on your team. If you're a machine learning engineer, we found that our machine learning engineers love to use Kedro because it does enable them to, in a sense, create an environment where people are writing prototypes in a certain way, well-structured, so that they can do more things with it. Some of our machine learning engineering use cases will be that they'll say, oh, we realized we needed to enable data validation for our data scientists as well, because we know that this is best practice. And what they'll do is use hooks in their Kedra project, and the data scientists are unaware that now data validation is running on their pipelines, and they get that out of the box. So it allows them to, I think, build code that's easily scalable, can be used in different environments, and definitely allows them to leverage it. For the data engineering use case, typically if you're a data engineer and writing, I think large scale feature engineering pipelines or doing a lot of data cleaning and really want a way, I think, to structure that workflow, then obviously Kedra is still fit for that purpose as well. And equally, you get features like Kedra Viz, which allow you to visualize how your pipeline is structured as well. And then I guess maybe the last group that really benefits from Kedra is the project leads. Because there are a few features that obviously Kedra Viz allows you to have a bird's eye view of what's happening in the pipeline structure. So you, I think, get to join the conversation on why we're using certain tables, because there's, you can kind of call it like first order data lineage viewable for you. And then I think some teams as well talk about how they don't have to be up at 2 a.m. Trying to fix what would have been their production build before, you know, they were supposed to be shipping it the next day, because things are a lot easier to work with, a lot easier to collaborate with, and a lot easier to maintain. But I'll hand over to Ivan.
Well, I think after this, there is not much to add. Maybe just to reiterate that, like, the main benefits I see data scientists are really keen about is, and also data engineers most like equally, is the fact that they can have their code in a more modular form, which kind of like naturally Kedra encourages people to write, which allows many different things. Like, for example, working in parallel for some things. That was the very first benefit that people experienced when they moved from, you know, purely notebook-based workflow to something like Kedra. And another one is by having modularity, it actually enables reusability in many situations. And a third thing that it enables is bigger and bigger projects. So something that can handle many more different data sources than usually people do exploit in a notebook, because very quickly things can get unmanageable. And by using Kedra, you keep that complexity under some kind of like easier, you know, you have the bird's eye view, as yet mentioned. You can look at Kedra Viz and immediately find out, you know, where you are in the bigger context.
And can you provide some illustrative examples of how large enterprises work with Kedra and what benefits they get, or maybe even what they struggle with or lose if they actually don't use Kedra in their machine learning projects? So in other words, what are the differences between two enterprises, one that uses Kedra and the other one that doesn't use? So for instance, let's use a banking sector as a reference, because usually in banks you have hundreds or even thousands of data practitioners. They are there are many different units, such as CRM, credit risk, cybersecurity, so many different departments, many different ways of working, different tools, and different programming languages. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Yeah, so maybe yet you can speak more about how a client like a bank can do, but I can use as an example our own company, because before I was here before Kedra existed, and at that time most of the code was like very specific, like depending entirely on the team that is developing it. Let's say some team member is more familiar with R or with Python or with, you know, Scala, and then they would have different team members that are more familiar with different parts of the code. They would develop each part of the code with different programming language. That's one thing. And then second, integration was like nightmare. And often you would get to experience the thing that you had to mention, like you having the rewrite of the code in order to get it into production. So the movement from development to production was really difficult. And sometimes when you go to a client, the code you leave there is hard to understand, hard to read. And it was complicated to move beyond certain size of projects. So when we started using Kedra, at least the first versions, That's why it actually spread like a rapid fire inside the company, because it enabled all of our teammates. Like when you're on a small unit, you have a data engineer, you have a data scientist, you have a machine learning engineer. All of those people, they speak the same language. They speak the language of nodes. So I'm developing that node, you're developing that node. They speak the language of pipelines or sub pipelines. I'm developing that pipeline, you're developing that sub pipeline. And it immediately increased the productivity of people. And it immediately made our code bases much cleaner, much easier to work with. And definitely our clients were much happier with the end result. So this is what using Kedro did to Quantum Duck, and essentially by extension after that with McKinsey, when we introduced that to the wider McKinsey with the bigger analytics arm of McKinsey. And as a consequence of that, we eventually started building bigger and bigger projects, which were more and more usable. So this is how it affected a company like McKinsey. I would say it's quite a big company. But yet you can bring in to life with more examples from client situations without obviously saying the client names.
Well, I mean, like I can actually just talk about like my experience working at a bank before I joined the team. I think I used to build quite a few of the data engineering pipelines, and I was always quite highly aware with the code that I was writing that if one of my colleagues even just made a typo, a small typo somewhere in the code base, because I knew nothing about software engineering best practice then they wouldn't be able to run anything, and they wouldn't actually be able to tell what the error was, what error was caused, and be able to rectify it. So immediately, even things like going on holiday meant that I would be called because someone has broken the code and I'm now trying to troubleshoot from wherever I'm at, trying to help them with these things. So equally, this whole thing of like, how do we make sure that really the code is maintainable? Kedro does actually allow for that to happen. It's not just me that should be able to maintain the code base. It should be others that are collaborating with us. I can give one example of a really cool company. They wrote about this and published it on Medium called Telkomsel. Telkomsel is, I think, Indonesia's like largest like telecommunications network. And they speak about how they've used Kedro quite extensively in like several of their data related projects within Telkomsel. So it's consuming, picture the scale of this, it's consuming like tens of terabytes of data. They're running hundreds of feature engineering tasks, and they're serving dozens of machine learning models at their company. And some of the benefits that they describe is like, I think to this whole thing of collaboration, the collaboration between their data science and data engineering team has never been this smooth. So the joy of having, I think to Ivan's point, everyone speaking the same language and working the same way. They also have a single truth for all of the data sources and syncs and feature logic and all the configurations that they might need. So Adam, you were speaking about, obviously in the banking situation, you'd have all of these different data systems as well. The Kedro data connector functionality allows you to connect all of them and also have a single view of where all of these ones that you're using in your pipeline come from. They also definitely enjoy the ability to run their complex end-to-end data pipelines with just a few commands. And they really enjoy, I think, how having a pipeline visualization as well really does help with debugging and also explaining to non-technical users. And because of this as well, I think we talk about Kedro kind of introducing some baseline software engineering concepts to new users as well. Obviously, that does allow you, once you've hit that level, to try and explore other ones. So they talk about even now their data scientists picking up or writing unit tests and integration tests as well, because they want to make higher quality data science scripts as well. So it's really this whole thing of like the whole org, I think, has moved in terms of software engineering best practice for production code as they need to, which is really exciting. I think also to build on some of the things that Ivan said about the Quantum Black journey, because we've been writing code in this modular way and it is reusable, we're now benefiting in other ways in terms of scale, where I think we talk quite publicly about products like Customer One, Optimus AI are sometimes mentioned on the Quantum Black LinkedIn. What those code bases are essentially all of these reusable scripts that we've been writing over the past few years. And we've essentially been able to almost like industrialize the way that we write machine learning code in a new way because we've adopted some of these best practices through Kedro.
Yeah, I think the upskilling point is really, really good. I'm glad you brought that up, and I forgot to mention, because this is something that we experienced. You know, going on Kedri feels like a small step initially, but actually over time, people who do not come from software engineering backgrounds, they get to understand some of these like principles of reusability, modularity, what using a function that has only inputs and outputs without writing in between is in a way pure functions and things like that without them having to learn specifically that. So they get to be exposed through their work and eventually they become better engineers. And that is especially important for data science as a like as an industry and as a role, because we all know that in the data science domain you have lots of domain experts, and otherwise this field would not exist because the domain experts are actually the ones that know what each column in a data means, like what are the things that are actually spurious correlations and so on. So those people, they very rarely have software engineering background, and that means that they might struggle with putting things in production. And for us, that was like maybe not a designed outcome, but it was a very welcomed. A lot of the data scientists who did not have software engineering background, they became better software engineers as a side outcome from working with Kedra.
Yes, so I actually found this case study that you mentioned about Indonesia's largest telecommunication company. So if everyone is interested in this use case, you can go to kedra.com and there is a link to this blog post. Can you also share any like numbers or statistics that can describe the adoption of Kedra?
So I think we probably look to like the public stuff that we reference about Kedra. Kedra has like well over like 8,000 stars. Well, I think just about 8,000 stars now. The growth of the project has largely been organic, we finally have a developer advocate that has joined the team this year. But a lot of the time it's just actually been people finding Kedra on their own and also figuring out that it solves their problems. Other things that we can also look to as well is that the project, you can sometimes check how many people or how many projects, open source projects, depend on the tool as well. There's a feature in GitHub called UseBy, and it's used by, I think, over 1,200 projects as well, and that number is growing. It's always good to check, I think, if you're exploring data science tools, like that number. And then we've got just under 170 contributors to the project too, which has been quite exciting to note. So, I think we're trying to obviously make a bigger stand, I think, in the MLOps, or if I'm actually specific, machine learning engineering space, because that's more apt, I think, what Kedra does. You'll see, I think, obviously more work this year, I think, as we push on the awareness front for Kedra.
And do you have any like estimates how many companies use Kedra in their projects?
There are actually a lot more. So we do have something on our README, a section called like Who Likes Kedra, which is quite easy to check out. And what we do here is for any company that wants to update the README and wants to add their company name, please go do that if you are a fan. There are a lot of companies that actually use Kedra, but we can't talk about it. I think by nature of the work that we do within Quantum Black. I mean, you'll see that baseline list, but there are hundreds of other companies that have used Kedra, I think, in the space as Kedra has existed in its different forms over the past few years.
Yeah, and I believe that Kedra can be used by any company, especially every company that would like to be data-driven and implement data or machine learning pipelines. But is there any specific segment of companies that benefit from Kedra the most?
So I think it speaks to, when we talk about, I think, best use of Kedra, if you're going to collaborate with yourself in future or with other team members, and you're building a data engineering or data science pipeline, then it's actually best fit for you. There's actually places where Kedra is not good for you. If I'm specifically focusing on just quickly doing some experimental prototype work that is never going to ever see some sort of production system, and I just want to quickly check my ideals, just work in a notebook, it's fine. We do believe like Jupyter notebooks, I think, in the space are really good for that exploratory, completely exploratory work, and then equally also good for reporting, for instance, if you want to report on like what's coming out of your pipeline. So Kendro, in that sense, I think it becomes a bit of an overhead or a bit of an overkill if it was just code that you're never really going to see again. But if you really have a sense, obviously, that this work, I'm going to be working with multiple people on it, easily it could land up in a production system, and it's easier to just start from a Kedra project and even do some of your Jupyter Notebook exploratory work using the Kedra integration for it, and get up to speed there. So definitely, I think for companies that really want to take, I think, writing code that they want to deploy in the first place, then this is definitely the place to go. And it's also probably worth mentioning here where Kedra fits in the space, because we talk about this whole journey of writing code that is fit for production, it's production ready. We don't really talk about orchestration of the code, which sometimes a lot of people do confuse with Kedra. They see the pipeline visualization and they're like, wow, you're like Airflow, or you're like Prefect or Dagster or Metaflow. And they solve a different problem, which is, how do I make sure that my pipeline runs at 7 a.m. And if it fails three times, send me an email so I can work out what to do with that code. They solve the orchestration problem, which is a very difficult one to do, but they don't really solve the problem of, how do I even get to code that can run at 7 a.m. in the morning, that I have a proper structured code base to do that. So it's a different problem, obviously. Yeah, I think really that's the space where we see Kedra existing. It's the part before this: how do you develop code that is fit for production, as opposed to how do I deploy it and run it in production systems?
Yeah, I think this is the development journey that Kedra is supporting to get to production. And another use case for Kedra is when you want to ensure that your code is independent from different platforms. Let's say you are not sure whether you want to deploy to the AWS native construct there and all of the things, or maybe you want to use GCP, or maybe you want to run on both, or maybe you want to run on Azure, wherever. Like, if you're using any of those, then they have very specific, you know, primitives and ways to run the code. And if you need to write the code in that particular way, it's very hard porting it to another platform. Where when you're using Kedra, it's already like in this intermediate representation or this intermediate language that you can run very easily on different platforms. And the way you can run that is through different plugins. And some of them are actually developed by Getting Data. Maybe some of them that I can mention is like Kedra Vertex AI and Kedra Azure ML, some of the popular ones, but there are a few more. And this freedom actually not only gives you the freedom like to move, Kedra not only gives you the freedom to move between different platforms, but also by knowing that you have that freedom, it can dictate a lot of, you know, solutions for you. It can give you some freedom in like maybe running things on different environments might be more beneficial for your company. And also it gives you the ability to get more parts of your company to interact together. Because in some companies, especially the big ones that you mentioned, they are actually users of all three big providers. And if you restrict them into only using one of the things, that might not work. In like, they need to rewrite the same pipeline for different providers. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a very important benefit of using something like Kedra. So that independence that you get, it's hard to get by, you know, just deciding to go all in for a particular tool.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. And also, you mentioned that that Getting Data implemented a few plugins for Kedra. And the reason for doing that was the fact that we wanted to have the same data scientist experience regardless of the cloud. Because something that is good to say is the fact that Kedra is open source and cloud agnostic technology. And we talked a lot about benefits for a company to use Kedra in their own projects. But there is also an important benefit for data scientists or data practitioners. So if they learn how to work with Kedra and they happen to change a company, and if they're a new company, use Kedra as well, then they can quickly adapt and become productive very quickly, because thanks to Kedra, different companies can also speak a similar language.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly right. And we shouldn't forget that, like, some of those tools that are the cloud providers, they were built by software engineers. As Yetu mentioned, they were like mainly focusing on orchestration as well, because it's important to run the things in production. And as such, they become, they start to assume a lot of software engineering or DevOps knowledge, which is lacking in data scientists. So there is this big disconnect. You know, you have the best tool to run your pipeline, but you really need to understand some DevOps construct. You need to know like how to set up your CI/CD. You need to know, okay, this one is like the way you should write things. And then a lot of your code is not the domain specific code you need to write. It's actually a lot of it is glue code that happens to get everything together. And because of this disconnect, a lot of the work that is being done by data scientists doesn't end up being used in production. And that is exactly why Kedra wants to be the bridge between those two worlds. We really want to help data scientists have this uniform experience regardless to what they're developing. And for a company like Quantum Black, where we are essentially a consultancy, we cannot have, you know, let's call the AWS expert, or let's call the GCP expert, because that GCP expert or AWS expert might be busy with another project. That's why we would like just to have, you know, data scientist expert who would develop the project, the data engineering expert who would develop the data engineering work, and then the translation should be done somehow automatically without them needing to know deep expertise in the different cloud solutions. And this enabled a lot of, it enables a lot of scale in terms of, you know, making sure that people can, you can get the best people for the problem at hand rather than the best people for the problem at hand who also happen to know the cloud for that particular client.
Yes, absolutely. And we talked a lot about other companies using Kedra to implement their own use cases, to analyze their data. But I'm also interested if you analyze some data or do some own internal analytics to define the product roadmap for Kedra. So would you be able to share any information about this? So for example, if you have some data sets that you take into account to analyze how Kedra is used, or what features you should develop or not develop, and things like that about using data, internal or external data, and all analytics to decide what to do next.
I think that just generally speaks to our product development process and how we define our roadmap. So I can talk about that. I think Kedra, we did put it into the Linux Foundation, almost a year ago, my goodness. So it was almost a year ago. And what that really meant for the project is that we want to be governed by the community. When we build any new features, we want to collaborate with different companies around the world that are using it and also relying on it and building on top of it. I think that's very, very important for us as we move forward. So all of our development work is actually done in public. It's very easy to see which GitHub issues we're working on now, which milestones we're trying to achieve as well. And then equally also explore a roadmap as well, because we do also have an open board, so you can check what's happening across the project and also give us feedback about the different things. It also means as well, in terms of like how we source data, Kedra does have a telemetry plugin called Kedra Telemetry, which collects, it's an opt-in, because we're GDPR compliant, it's an opt-in plugin that will ask you whether or not you want to send data back to the project. We use that to inform, like, obviously we'll see maybe from the CLI, certain commands are being highly used and others not so. And from that, obviously, because you've got the quantitative data, you can now go and do some research as to, okay, what's going on? Why are people not using this command? You will see, I think in upcoming 19, we are sunsetting some of the commands. I mean, our least favorite one was, I think, Kedra NB activates, it would activate the Jupyter Notebook strip out plugin, which would clear out your Jupyter Notebook cells. It was used 10 times in the last 2 years. So, I mean, in terms of being able to do, I think, a general cleanup of functionality that just clearly did not take off for our users, we do find that quite important. In terms of some of the upcoming things that you'll see across the project, and Ivan can definitely add some insight here, we have this big work stream on configuration because we've kind of been collecting a stack of GitHub issues or questions related to config, related to templating our configuration as well. And we're really taking that on by integrating OmegaConf as a really cool open source project into the Kedra framework and giving our users the option to use that. We're also working, I think, our quest for 2023, we'll see how far we get with this one, is to really release a stable framework as well. That does require that we have to revisit a lot of the functionality that we built over the past few years and see if it's actually working for our users and really investigate whether or not some of the additional use cases need to support the design of the new version of it before we ship that version. We also will, we obviously have users that will use Kedra, even though Kedra is cloud agnostic and platform agnostic, with Databricks, I think, is the largest one. Databricks, AWS SageMaker, and Azure ML. And really, we want to be able to support our users with appropriate ways or appropriate workflows when they use those tools as well, so that they don't, yes, Kedra has some implementation details for how to do this, but it should be far more seamless when you get started with those tools as well. On the Kedra Viz project, which is our pipeline visualization tool, we're really actually doubling down on a new user base. So this would be if you're a consumer actually of Kedra Viz, maybe you want to see some dashboards as well attached to your pipeline run. Kedra already Viz already supports some elementary functionality because it integrates with Plotly and Matplotlib quite nicely. But we'd like to be able to expand on those use cases and even think of things like how easy is it for you to visualize the pipeline Viz and let your friends or colleagues see it. Because right now you'd have to run it and see a localhost app from your computer before you're able to interact with it. We also will be extending some of the experiment tracking functionality, which we shipped last year. Experiment tracking in Kedra is kind of interesting because what it does is it leverages existing functionality in Kedra. So you don't really need to, you know, install other tools. So if you just need experiment tracking, no model registry or model serving, then you get it embedded out of the box just by leveraging Kedra functionality. So really, we want to make sure that it's possible, I think, in the future version of this feature, to have a collaborative experiment tracking workflow that you can see your friends or your colleagues experiment tracking data, because right now it's still just your data that you're seeing because it's a local host app. And we also have a local database actually on your computer, so you can't do that. And then there are all kinds of cool things as well. We're really also tackling the learning journey as well. We spoke about this need for learning software engineering, and equally we know Kedra in some sense has somewhat of a learning curve because these things are implicit in the product. So we're really tackling on the journey for how do we teach people the stuff as well, so you're not left in the deep, in the dark for why these principles exist as well. So you will see quite a development of, you know, a few courses on online, I think, online platforms for learning. So there will be an introduction to Kedra course there. There will be the basics of software engineering so that you're up to speed on some of the basics that underpin Kedra as well. So yeah, there's quite a few things happening across the project. Yeah, I can hand over to Ivan.
Yeah, so that was a lot to cover. And this is what we'll try to cover in 2023. And maybe another thing to add is we will also look into improving the interactive workflow on Jupyter Notebooks. That would include notebooks that are, you know, in hosted and managed notebook solution like Databricks is the example there, but also some of the ones that you have in SageMaker and the other tools. And I'll bring back the conversation to the config that you had mentioned. That's a big one, because for what we found out is like essentially when Kedra was developed, it was developed for much smaller projects, but over time people started using it for bigger and bigger projects, and we found out that there is this, you know, configuration explosion problem where you might need to, if you need to have different configurations for where to store your data and like different environments with different combinations of different pipelines, this is something we're really, really keen to tackle, because we think it will unlock a lot of our users to do more complex projects without having complex configuration. CLI cleanup is definitely on the list. And one thing that I'm particularly keen on is simplifying the project template, because that would help our new users, and especially the ones that have very little experience with programming and software engineering. Because currently, when you just do Kedra new and then you get like a few folders, most of them are like very benign and easy to work with. But the sheer number of those folders sometimes overwhelms, you know, very, very beginner users. And in general, that's our, you know, trajectory. We would like to, you know, maybe to summarize, to focus on three main directions: making it easier for beginner users. That's one of the directions, including documentation, trainings, and simplifying lots of the work. Then the second direction would be making it easy to deploy on many different platforms and seamless integrations with some of the big platforms. The third one is making the life of plugin developers easier, and trying to increase the community and getting more of the community involved into the future and the shape of Kedra. And especially as being part of Linux Foundation, we really want to achieve that and make it a truly, you know, open source and truly common project for everyone in the community.
Yeah, so this is very interesting to hear how the product backlog looks like, what you are focusing on in 2023. And can you also share your view on future evolution of MLOps in general? So what are the most important trends that you see when you work with open source community, or when you work with different companies building their ML solutions?
I think I can maybe comment on like maybe one or two things I think I'm seeing. So when we talk about like MLOps tooling as well, I think there are too many. Where I think probably over 2023, we're going to start seeing either convergence or clear dominant players actually taking the stage for certain pieces. So obviously there's MLflow. There's a very popular Kedra MLflow plugin as well, which allows you to enable experiment tracking and model registry for your Kedra pipelines that you could also take a look at. And then the second thing as well is like, I think we need to be honest with ourselves about whether or not all of this tooling has actually made it easier for code to make it into production systems. So I think people over the year, we know that there's an economic environment that's happening right now, will really be looking for proving out value of the things that they've been building. And so really, it will be, I think, a time for us to take stock about whether or not the stuff has actually helped get our code into production. The problem around the software engineering best practice, I think, has been commented quite a few times as well. So I think we'll probably start seeing quite a bit of literature or commentary on what is code quality for data science projects look like. What is software engineering best practice for data science projects look like? Because that still seems to be a significant barrier in the space. There are some really cool initiatives that you can check out in this space. One called Code Quality for Data Scientists. I think it's CQ for DS, led by this guy called Laszlo. He's quite popular quite a big commentator in the MLOps community, which is also a Slack group. And I think it's a new era of people speaking about, hey, could we put some engineering back into the data science space? I think that would probably be the third trend that we start to see over the year. And maybe there's one more. Obviously, there's a lot of hype around ChatGPT, large language models as well. So it remains to see. And everyone's now talking about LMM ops because they just wanted to add things together. So it remains to see. It remains to be seen how this will impact the space. I mean, I would love for if we're so magical with our things, even though I know we're very, very far away from these things, is if you could take someone's, you know, Jupyter notebook and immediately ask ChatGPT to make you a Kedra project with everything fixed. Maybe that's the dream, but we're very far away from that.
So this is really interesting what you said, especially I also see that there are many MLOps tools. And it's interesting to see how the landscape will evolve. Maybe there will be like some consolidation. And I wanted to also ask about a company called Iguazio. A few days ago, I read an article on TechCrunch about McKinsey acquiring Iguazio. And this is a Tel Aviv-based company that offers MLOps platform for large-scale businesses. And the article says that Iguazio and Quantum Black teams at some point in the future will be fully integrated and work together on a single product roadmap, combining the best of their both worlds. And what does it mean for Kedro, and what does it mean for like your product development?
So I can talk about Iguazio and how that would go and how that would affect Kedro. I think it's amazing news that we acquired this new company. They have been in the MLOps space and they've built a platform that is helping different clients to get more of their code to production. We have had something internally that we were working along that space, and this is when we. The article is mentioning that we will eventually converge and try to join forces on that front. In terms of how would that roadmap influence Kedro? So the very first thing is that, again, we want to make Kedro to be natively run by Iguazio very, very easily. So there should be as little steps as possible for people to be able to run on that. So we can enable all of the Iguazio users and Kedro users to essentially use those platforms, and there could be many of those. Another impact that it will have on Kedro is like, again, we have one more extra vehicle to be run on, and we will get to experience from and learn from the experience of our colleagues at Iguazio, because they have running in different client situations to the client situations we've run into. And I think it's going to be a great exchange of ideas. So that's probably the biggest impact on Kedro. Having said that, I think Kedro is still going to be essentially a platform agnostic tool, because this is where our direction is. We should not forget that now Kedro is the de facto a Linux Foundation tool rather than Quantum Black tool. So essentially our roadmap is dictated by the community. Obviously Quantum Black is part of that community, but we cannot, you know, set our agenda based on only one of our community members. So I see it as a very exciting opportunity for Kedro to be run on another platform. And the good news is, and the reason why I wanted to talk is because I think I'm very excited for this, because actually this is the first step of the integration process. We will make sure that Kedro runs well on Iguazio. So if there are any Iguazio users or MLRun users out there, I hope that by mid-year we will have something for you that will make your lives way easier. And it will, you know, make it work like a magic, you know, from a Kedro project to running on Iguazio or MLRun.
And I think maybe just as a final comment on this, I think to Ivan's point around the excitement that we have around Iguazio, this is like a significant investment from McKinsey. I think really in making sure that not only do companies around the world get to have machine learning, but get to sustain their value from what they're running. Get to see that these things are functional in production systems, making sure that it's easy for people to maintain them so that they don't need a large base of people to be doing that as well. So yeah, we're really just excited about what this means. It's the biggest mark of confidence that we're moving in the right direction. And as I mentioned towards the trends, this is a convergence on making sure that we can have continued value from the things that we're writing. These are not, it's not ML prototypes. We're talking about ML products and software that needs to be functional. So that's where we're heading.
Yes, and this was actually my last question. So I would like to thank you very much for sharing your knowledge and your insights with our audience. Thank you very much for this conversation.
It's been great. Thank you so much, Adam.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you